Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Season 7 of Stand Up and Stand Out. Párate y destécate. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Nikki Green. As a life and business resiliency expert, I thought we would share some stories of resilience this season. It's also the one-year anniversary of Chameleon Mindset, my best-selling book, and we are giving away a bunch of great prizes and deep discounts on my coaching programs to celebrate. Be sure to check the show notes of each episode to learn more and follow me on social media. I hope you're enjoying Season 7, and I look forward to hearing your feedback and comments on the fascinating topics we're going to cover with each guest. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 7 of Stand Up and Stand Out. Today, we're talking royals. I even got my tiara on and everything. So we've brought the expert on royals, Gertrude Daly, here to join us and talk about this and writing and so much more. Well, before we get started, let me tell you guys a little bit about Gertrude, and then we'll kind of jump into today's interview. So Gertrude Daly is an experienced writer and blogger. In her day job, Gertrude writes operation and maintenance manuals for a company that creates automated guided vehicles used in factories and warehouses to move goods. In her free time, Gertrude runs Gert's Royals, a blog about European monarchies, and you can find her on Twitter at, or now X, Gert's Royals. Gertrude is also the co-author of two books on plain English medical writing, Plain English for Doctors and Other Medical Scientists, and Diagnosing and Treating Medicus Incomprehensibilis, almost easy for me to say. And Gertrude has also contributed some short stories to her writing group's annual anthologies. So we've got our anthologies here, our latest one that we've been putting out, The Spaces in Between, and last year's Denizens of the Deep. Hi, Gertrude. How are you today?
Hi, Nikki. I'm great. How are you?
Good. It's been such a fun time getting to know you over the past few years. You and I met through the writing journey here, which is a local writing group. How long have you been a part of the writing journey?
I think 2 years. I joined NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writers Month, in November in 2021, and I've been with them since then.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into writing, and, you know, and how you got into royals?
I think I've always been interested in writing and royalty. I mean, all the books you read as children are usually about royalty. We kind of like those fairy tales, and it's kind of cool to follow them and see all the work that they do. Interesting thing, there's a really great royal watching community. And it's interesting because when you're watching the royals, you're learning about a bunch of different things. Like, I watch the Nobel Prizes every year, and I learn about those different things because the Nobel Prizes are hosted by the Norwegian and Swedish royals. So it's a great way of kind of learning about the world, learning about different things. And there's lots of tiaras and pretty dresses and stuff, so you get the best of sort of all the different worlds.
Yeah. So I didn't really know too much about the royals. You know, here in the U.S., we kind of, well, we have sort of like, you know, royalty for as far as people that make a lot of money, but not really like royal families and this lineage. And I think you're right. Like, when you're little, you always have all these fairy tales where, you know, there's a prince, a princess, a king and queen, sometimes good, sometimes evil. So there's a lot of mix in there. And so you wrote medical writing. Interesting. So how did you get into those books?
My mom and dad are both doctors, as are like half of my family. And one day my stepdad was writing some medical journal articles, and he asked my dad to help because my dad had experience in plain English and was like, this is a really important topic. I need to explain this so that everyone can read it because it's just so important. And so they collaborated on some medical journal articles, but decided that these ideas were really important. And that it's really vital in medicine that we have all these new discoveries, but that it gets shared. So plain English, in terms of medical writing, what we did was looking at medical journal articles, things that would be written by experts for experts, and saying, hey, we need to keep all of that necessary, complex, scientific content, but still present it in a way that's clear and understandable. So after I had graduated with a degree in English, I came on and I helped them actually turn that into a book. So my effort was really taking their good ideas and putting it in a way that was accessible for others.
That's so awesome, because I know anytime I go to the doctor's office and they ramble off 1,000 things, you rarely understand really what's going on. And it's important for us to have a better understanding of these things.
And I love reading, you know, kind of different studies and things, but I get challenged with understanding the language. And unless you, you know, spent 8+ years getting a doctorate degree, it's really hard, you know, to understand that. So that's a really cool thing that you did. I could see how that could kind of cross over into your day job of, you know, working on those manuals as well as kind of making things in plain English that could be more complicated.
Yeah. And it's not always about translating stuff so like laymen can understand it. But the secret is your colleague down the hall sometimes has difficulty understanding you. It's just about taking those good ideas and dealing with readability, because that's not something that journals really address, because they're just looking at the scientific content. When a medical journal is being reviewed, it's being reviewed by a doctor that's looking at the science. But people aren't really looking at the writing style and saying, are we presenting this information in the clearest way? So that is something I bring to my work. That's something I bring to my royal blogging. Because it's all about taking this information, whether you have some idea, and just presenting it in a way that's understandable. It's a lot about thinking about who your audience is and what information they need. Like if I have an acronym, depending on who I'm talking to, I need to explain what that acronym is. And so just a lot of little things like that and thinking about who your audience is.
That's really important. Actually, we were talking about this. I was saying in business school, we only learned how to write two things, either emails or case studies. And case studies, similar thing, is that it gets very technical, kind of in business jargon. And especially depending on the company you're working for, there's a lot of acronyms. So if you don't know, it's really hard to understand them. And when I changed companies, that was even harder because they would use some of the same acronyms, but they would not mean the same thing because there wasn't really a universal way of talking about things. So I think maybe you have some opportunity to do that more in the business world for sure.
Yeah, and acronyms are great. Definitely use them because they're helpful. But one of the things we talk about in the books is like essential scientific terms, which you can just apply this concept to anything. It's that there are some big, long science words you need to use. They're the only option to use them. But a lot of times people feel that they need to use this technical term in order to sound smart or because they think they need to be formal. And so sometimes it's like, use that term once, be like, you know, heart attack, and then use the big, long medical term. So everyone's clear, this is exactly what you're talking about, but then use the plain English term throughout. And so when you have an acronym, explain what it is at the beginning to help make it clear that it's what it is, and then you can use that acronym. And I would say sometimes there are different acronyms for like the same thing. Be consistent, choose an acronym, use it throughout.
That's such good advice. Because, and this is such a big part of writing, speaking, all of it is communication. And I think we underestimate how many times we're not really communicating with each other because we're not on the same page of what we're doing.
Often we're like, we need to be formal, or we need, with creative writing, you're like, oh, I need to use this flowery language. I'm going to pull out my thesaurus, use these big words. But if your audience doesn't understand that, then all your meaning is lost. You're using this word, it's supposed to do its job, but it's not. So it is important to think about whether people are going to understand that word. You know, it's always great if you can prefer a shorter word, a simpler word. Use the big long word when you need to. But, and if you also look at like readability statistics, like the Flesch Reading Aid score, they look at syllable length. And when you get over 3 syllables, that's harder to understand. And it's a little harder for your brain to process. And it also gets into things like using nominalizations or like the abstract form of a word. Like you could use the word recommendation and that has a number of syllables. But if you can rewrite that sentence to use the word recommend, that's a verb. It's showing action. It's shorter. Little changes like that can help bring your reading score down and make it more understandable.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I didn't think about that, like the number of syllables and how important that is. You know, readability and for, you know, I know a lot of times when I'm trying to write, especially creatively, like you said, you're trying to find sort of synonyms and, you know, you're starting to use that thesaurus, but you start getting a little too creative and too flowery and then you can't understand. I'm sure you came across this a lot as you were working on your blog of the royals, because there's probably lots of new terms or, you know, terms for very specific procedures and processes and things that they go through. So maybe share a little bit about how you got into the blog and what you've learned over the time you've had it.
Well, I started the blog back a long time ago when I was in college. And really, it was just, I was interested in the Royals. I was following them. And what really started was at the end of every year for the British Royals, they'll count the number of official engagements each royal does. And there's a tally. And people always make a big deal over it. Especially like Prince William, Princess Kate tend to be on the lower end. Especially at that time, they were not full-time working royals yet. William still had a day job. And so one of the things I noticed was I feel like people only give them kind of credit in their mind for things that they see they do. And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that we don't have photos of. So mentally, we're like, oh, they don't do a lot of work because we only saw them once, but they had all these meetings. And a number of this stuff, not all the behind-the-scenes work, is captured in the court circular. So in the London Times every day, there's a court circular that lists all the official engagements the royals did that day, which is nice. I think of it as like a receipt for the taxpayers. This is what your money went to. But one thing I did was I started on my blog with a list. Here are all the official engagements Kate has done so far this year. This is what we expect to be upcoming. As a way of being able to actually see and visualize it and kind of quantify what has she done, opposed to what have we just seen photos of. And it was sort of the way the blog started was often there'd be like arguments on Twitter about something. And I was like, I can prove it with statistics, just trying to compile some information because, you know, often you don't give people credit for things you don't see or you forget about that thing. And it's nice to kind of have that record.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nikki Green, and I am a life and business resiliency expert. I have been helping people for over 2 decades overcome their challenges and achieve their life and business goals. I wrote Chameleon Mindset for others seeking clarity while acclimating to new situations. This entertaining yet research-based guide to transitions will open your mind to unique strategies for finding purpose and achieving your goals. Through my new book, you will create the happy life you desire with 5 philosophies for change, beginning with C for creative adaptability. Move from resistance to resilience by assessing and adjusting your risk tolerance. The practical lessons in Chameleon Mindset will help you shift your mindset, sharpen your skill set, and overcome the things holding you back from dealing with change. We'll have the new online course coming soon. There are 6 modules in total, but the way you choose to pursue your destiny, it's up to you. Each module can be done independently or repeated as necessary to tackle new obstacles and new goals in your life. And you can earn extra chameleon coins for uncovering them. What are chameleon coins, you might ask? These are reward XP that you can earn to purchase additional Chameleon Mindset benefits as you progress through the course. You can get swag, group coaching, one-on-one coaching, exclusive event tickets, and networking opportunities. And if you collect enough coins, you can even earn a full-day VIP intensive with me to work solely on your goals. And by joining the Chameleon crew, you will also gain access to my network of thousands of influential people around the world with expertise to help you on your business, your personal endeavors, health and fitness, and so much more. Reserve a copy today and click below to be added to our subscriber list.
I do like that accountability. It would be nice, I think, even here in the US, if we had more accountability and better understood what our officials were working on, you know, where they're spending their time. Because like you said, it is like a receipt of the government of, you know, hey, here's my taxpayer dollars. Here's where I'm expecting you to kind of spend your resources. Is it actually happening? And hold them somewhat accountable, right?
Yeah, both in like a good way and bad way. There were a lot of things I didn't discover until I actually like sat down and started doing charts. Like one thing I noticed was we'll often have conversations be like, oh, who do you think's going to attend this event this year? And is it significant that this person was absent? Well, if you're able to look back at the past years of that event and say who was there and who wasn't, then we can have, you know, actually productive conversations. So that's one thing I did. And a lot of that was figuring out how to present this information in a way that is clear. So I use a lot of charts, which is something I kind of had to learn to do because I use Blogger for Gertz Royals. They don't have that function, but I learned how to go into the HTML and do that. And there's all these little things. Yeah. Because originally I was like, I want to have a chart. And I did it in Word. And then I took a screenshot and I put an image in. And then how do you update that? You can't update that. I mean, without doing a lot of work. And so it was really just a throw something out there and update and revise and add to it. There have been a number of times I've just reorganized everything, especially as it grew. You know, when you have a little information, it makes sense kind of to do things one way. But as things grow, as I added on the other European monarchies, things change. And I think you have to have that kind of adaptability and constantly being like, can I do this better?
As you've gone across and studied all like different royalties, do you have kind of a favorite or, you know, one that was the most interesting that you learned, maybe stuff you didn't expect?
There's interesting stuff about all the different royals. I think definitely my focus has been on British royals. That is the one I think are definitely the most popular. They're the ones I cover most in depth. Both, like, I like them, other people like them. But what is great is there are like uniquenesses. You know, each royal has their own little thing that they do, special events. But there's also a lot of things in common. Every monarchy will have some reception in the new year where they'll invite all the foreign diplomats, or they all pretty much give either Christmas or New Year's speech. They have a national day. There's a state opening of parliament. So one thing I do, even though sometimes those events have slightly different terms in terms of what they're officially called, I try to use the same term. Because when you understand what a state opening is for the British royals, you use that term consistently, the reader is like, ah, I understand what that is, what's involved. So that's one thing I try to do is, even though sometimes terms vary, especially as the terms originally came from whatever language is that country and we're converting it to English, I try to be consistent with terminology to make it clear.
That probably helps a lot, again, for readability, because it can get kind of overwhelming if it's not something you're used to. You know, even like between the US and, you know, the British, if they say Parliament versus like Congress, you know, sort of similar concepts, right? Because we've come from their government structure, but different procedures. And so using its names helps.
Yeah. Or a lot of the parliaments have special names, but I'll always be like, here's that name of that, but in brackets, Parliament, to help make clear to people. Because sometimes you do want to use the name of the organization, but also have this thing that people understand.
Yeah, makes sense. Do you think lately, because there's been kind of a rise in TV shows around royals, that the interest is rising again? Because I think for a while there was kind of a push away from it and, you know, people just kind of ignored it if it wasn't their kind of country. But do you think that's kind of rising?
I think there has always been an interest in royals. I talk with my grandma, and I forget what magazine she got, but she loved to look at the little photos of Queen Elizabeth and Princess Margaret. I think there have always been an interest in the royals. And it's just new things coming out, a way of reaching a younger generation. But there is definitely sort of ebbs and flows. And there's often these like big events, like a royal wedding. And that's often a way that people get introduced to the royals, which is always really interesting when, like, Sweden had its series of royal weddings, you know, a few years ago. That's when a lot of people discovered the Swedish royals. And I'm realizing that people are constantly sort of discovering the royals. So while I interact with a lot of people on Twitter and on other social media who I've known for years, who are also really knowledgeable about the royals, I need to keep remembering that, like, there are people who are new, who weren't around last year and did not experience that event. So always just trying to make sure that what you're writing is sort of accessible to everyone. They don't necessarily have that history you have. And one of the things as, like, an expert in a topic, because you can connect, like, A to Z, people need all those different steps in between. And just remembering to include that.
Yeah, to keep making sure you're bringing people along on the journey, because you don't know. People may come across you and it may be new to them. Maybe they got exposure to it through a TV show and now they want to learn more, right? About real people and real royals.
Yeah. And it can be hard sometimes to figure out, like, what does a newbie need? But often I look at the questions I get asked and use those as sort of measures of where do I have gaps? And so I can kind of sometimes anticipate the information people need. When people ask questions, I'm like, ah, let me add that information to my blog post. Or maybe it's already there. They just misunderstood it or something. And so using that as cues to update your writing.
That's beautiful. And I love, you know, having read your stories both in Denizens and the Deep and also in Spaces in Between, like how you still incorporate royals into your fiction writing as well. And so then there's that crossover. So I really love the poem, like one that you did in Spaces in Between. What does a queen do? That one, I remember reading it during the editing process and I was just like, oh, I love this. Like I could read this over and over again. So maybe tell me a little bit about your inspiration and what else you work on when you do fiction.
The inspiration for that was the Netherland royals. And there's a lot of little things that if you're familiar with the Netherland royals, you'd be like, oh, that's so Netherlands. I think, too, in like reading a bunch of stuff and writing stuff, your setting should kind of be a character in your story. It shouldn't just be like, oh, this is the Netherlands. But there should be things in there that kind of like require this setting to be the Netherlands or something. I guess what I mean by that is this story, you can replace the Netherlands and put something else and have everything make sense. Because there are things that are specific to it, which I think is great when you can pull in those details. But it was really cute and fun and just creative. It is very childlike because it's in rhyming couplets. But I knew that my audience was going to be adults. So there are a lot of, there's some big words in there that I was like, you know, nieces and nephews, my nieces and nephews would not understand. But they're not my audience. So it was okay that I used those. But it still had this childlike quality, but was entertaining for adults. And I just had fun with it.
I did too. I love doing these anthologies. And I'm so glad that I've gotten to meet you and so many other wonderful people in this group. You know, fiction writing isn't my forte. Like I said, my writing is mostly nonfiction. It's very business and career oriented and sometimes dry, other than my ridiculous stories of things that happen. But it's nice to have such a supportive group when you're trying to do creative endeavors. So that way, you know, we all help each other with editing, right? And we get better and people give us feedback on those stories throughout the process. And we're kicking off today, this year's anthology, and heading down a new path. Are you excited for the new anthology? Do you have some great new royal stories that you're going to throw in?
I'm very excited because I'm actually one of the editors this year. So I've been reading everybody's story ideas. They've been posting it. I thought yours was very interesting. I liked it. It had a very sort of like climate change theme to it, which I know also the story in Denizens of the Deep you wrote also had that. So that was nice. But I also noticed that my story in Denizens of the Deep also had a sort of environmental aspect. And just how interesting that was, slash like, we're of that generation where we care and think about those things. So I'm really excited about the anthology this year. I have one idea. I was thinking of another sort of, I don't want to write something that's too reminiscent of last year's story. But also, though, I just remember in like art classes as a kid, you got to try something, but then you moved on and you never really got to learn to perfect it. So I was thinking of doing something similar this year and having a cute story. I don't want to spoil anything. I do kind of like to, because I am interested in the royals and I feel like I know a lot, put some of that knowledge and expertise into my stories. So I usually try to pick a like monarchy that it's going to involve. And it's going to be about Denmark, which I'm excited because then it was like, it takes place in an airport, possibly. So I was like looking up at the Copenhagen airport. And I had this idea, but then I was like, this doesn't work given the terminal layout. And I think, you know, as writers, it is good to put some of those details in and to kind of deep dive into things. And it's also interesting. You learn about that when you try to write something. Even I, who know a lot about royals, I was working on a different story and it was taking place in St. James's Palace in London. And I had to do a very deep dive into that building and I learned a lot. And I think I was able to put details in that helped make the story richer. And you also learn what couldn't actually happen in real life. So that's always fun. But you also take creative liberties and sometimes be like, I'm going to do this for my story because it needs it, even though this is not factual. So you need a little bit of that balance.
Yeah, well, and that's the fun part. I think that was one part I really liked in school too, is like when I had to do a paper that I got to go research. And it was the mistake I made when I first started with Denizens of the Deep, because that was my first foray into the anthology. And my whole story was nothing but world building. And I kind of forgot the story. But again, you know, all the editors were so kind and they're like, wow, this sounds really awesome for like a 6-novel series. This is a little bit much, you know, for a 3,000 chapter that you're supposed to be putting together. So, but that also just gave me foundation that says, oh, there's more here, right? Like you said, after you start that one chapter and you see how people like it, if you want to build it into a fuller novel, you know, you'll have already that background that you've done. And then you can keep filling in, you know, sort of other story arcs and scenery and other important pieces. So,
yeah. And also just everything is a process. You're always going to update and revise things. And as writers, we need to allow ourselves to do that.
Absolutely. Well, time flies when we're having fun. If you guys haven't gotten a copy of either Denizens of the Deep or The Spaces in Between or any of the previous anthologies, they're all available on Amazon. If you guys go on to my link in bio at thenikkigreen360.com/books, all of the books are listed there. They'll take you over to Amazon. All the proceeds go back to the writing journey and help us continue on this legacy of helping the next generation of writers. Well, Gertrude, before we say goodbye, why don't you let people know where they can find you and how they can follow your blog and learn more about the Royals?
Well, my blog is gertroyals.blogspot.com. You can also find me on Twitter and probably Threads for now at gertroyals. But just for all my writing stuff, you can find me at gertrudedaily.com. And it's been great talking to you, Nikki.
Oh, thanks so much for being on the show. I hope other people from the group join too. Especially as we work on the next anthology, we'll see how it all comes together and we'll share more of some exciting journeys into the future. Who knows what's going to happen? Well, thank you guys for listening today. I hope you guys enjoyed this and inspired to do some writing of your own. Let us know what you guys are working on and how we can support you. Gertrude is an amazing, supportive writer and very knowledgeable if you need some royal background. All right, guys, have a wonderful day and catch us where all the cool kids hang out that do podcasts.